Tim, the mystery of Spring Hill Jack. We'll cover that in this hour. And joining us right now, John Matthews. He's authored over 60 books, including The Grail, Quest for Eternal Life, and Encyclopedia of Celtic Wisdom. He is a foremost expert in the Arthurian legends and esoteric wisdom of the Celtic traditions. He teaches and lectures around the world and resides with his wife, Caitlin, in Oxford, England. He's here with us this evening on Darkness Radio to discuss his new book, The Mystery of Spring Hill Jack, from Victorian legend to steampunk hero. John, thank you for joining us this evening.
It's my pleasure. Nice to be talking to you.
This is a cool aspect, something that I, you know, again, has always kind of popped up in different parts of our stories and interviews, but we've never focused solely on this character of Spring-Heeled Jack. What brought your attention to him as a standout as opposed to all the great other legends of your land there?
Well, I think I've known about him on and off for quite a long time. I became much more involved with the steampunk world recently, and that kind of drew my attention to it as well. And then I realized that there really were no new books about this character or no books that dealt with every aspect of this extraordinary story. So I thought, well, there's a gap, better fill it.
Again, there are a large portion of our audience that are not familiar with the term steampunk or what that entails. So since that will be a part of this, can you give us a bit of a description? What is the steampunk movement?
Well, it's kind of difficult to describe, but I suppose you could say it's a mashup between Victoriana and science. So it's Victorian science. The idea of steampunk is that instead of electricity becoming the central force for controlling everything and running everything, it's steam. So it's all steam engines and steam computers and all of that kind of thing. And everybody who's involved in it loves dressing up in Victorian costume. I do that myself sometimes. And, you know, we go and hang out together and have conventions and talk about these things.
And it's a great sci-fi world. You'll see, and I encourage people, go look up things like steampunk Ghostbusters, steampunk X-Men, just some of the amazing costumes. They take current ideas and put them back then, like what a steampunk computer would have looked like if it was run by steam instead of electricity, what the different superheroes would look like in these costumes. And they are, it's a fascinating little story and kind of subset of fandom out there. So I'm just always in awe of the amazing and very cool creations that I see these fans create out there with this theme in mind.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I love going along because you never know who you're going to run into or what kind of strange half-human, half-something-else being, you know, great robots, people dressed as, you know, explorers in the Victorian age but carrying ray guns. I mean, it's a wonderful mixture.
Yeah, it's kind of what we'd call the mashup, sci-fi mashup.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Spring Hill Jack. We've only got a few minutes left in the segment. But now a lot of people have, I think, interchanged and kind of talked about Jack the Ripper and Spring Hill Jack almost being one in the same character. But there is a definite definitive line between who these two beings are.
Yes, there are connections, and we can talk about that later maybe, but the main thing is here that you're looking at a character who was around quite a long time before Jack the Ripper. He first appeared in 1838, and that's about 60 years before Jack the Ripper. But he really is an extraordinary mixture of all kinds of different things, but primarily he's this strange, spooky figure. You know, the clawed hands, the staring, glowing eyes, fire coming out of his mouth, who leaps over hedges, sometimes over buildings, sometimes over roadways. And he's been seen, he's been popping up ever since, as I said, 1838 until the present. People are still citing him.
John, what is the earliest recollection of this character appearing?
The very first one was January the 9th, 1838, in London, at a place called Peckham. Where for the first time we heard this name. People were talking about this mysterious character who leapt out and terrified particularly women in the road. He would appear from nowhere, and people were suddenly complaining. They wrote to the Lord Mayor of London and said, what are you going to do about this? And until that moment, I think almost no one had heard it. And then suddenly it was on everyone's lips. Everyone was seeing him everywhere.
Now, can you give us a little idea of what was that area and time like? I mean, were these bar patrons that were seeing them late, on their way home from the pub, having thrown back a few pints, or what was the feel and vibe at that time?
Well, there certainly were people of that kind doing that kind of thing, most definitely. And there are stories of people indeed staggering out of the pub and suddenly seeing Spring-Heeled Jack, and they were, for some reason or other, rather dismissed. But in fact, the most of the people who saw him were respectable middle-class people, particularly women. Of course, they were naturally, being a Victorian time, accused of being hysterical and therefore making the whole thing up. But there's no doubt that there were very serious reports of attacks. And one of the most curious and, to me, fascinating things about Spring-Heeled Jack is that you never hear of him murdering anybody, raping anybody. He attacks them. He frightens them. He sometimes tears their clothes, but that's it. He doesn't do anything more serious than that. And yet, his name became a byword for terror in London.
Was he ever cited by multiple witnesses at the same time, or was it always seeming to be a loner?
No, there were a number of times when two or three people, sometimes whole gangs of people, because the citizens of London did start ganging together and going around the streets in bunches trying to catch this man, or whatever he was. And no, he was cited by them. He was cited leaping over buildings, disappearing behind hedges, and no one could then find him. So a kind of ghostly figure in a way, but also surprisingly solid.
Would he sometimes appear just as a gentleman walking about and then turn into something like a shapeshifter? Or was it always this kind of dark, shadowy, glowing-eyed, fiery-mouthed figure?
Pretty much the latter. You know, I mean, there were times when people would say that they'd seen this man walking along and then suddenly he would, well, not turn into exactly, but he'd turn round and they'd see the glowing eyes, the mask. He seemed to wear gloves with claws on them. Sometimes he's described as having bat wings. In fact, there's a very interesting connection here with the Batman figure, because there's no doubt that some of the early Victorian pictures that people imagined him looking like look remarkably like the dear old Caped Crusader.
Oh, very cool. We have to take a quick break. John Matthews, our guest, will continue with the mystery of Spring-Heeled Jack right after this. All right, we're back. This is Darkness Radio. Tonight, a look at Spring-Heeled Jack in the first hour of the show. And our guest this evening is John Matthews. John, being that you're such a deep, in-depth researcher and you've gone into stories, especially where it comes into the King Arthur legends, do you find now, as you're looking into the case of Spring-Heeled Jack, this creepy, fire-breathing, eye-glowing creature, that now that you're aware of him, are there similarities to creatures that lived like this during the Arthurian times?
Well, not particularly the Arthurian times, but there are characters who go back to much earlier periods. I mean, I find connections between him and the fairy races. I find connections with the very, very earliest green men, these sort of wild men who lived in the forest and behaved in the same way. They don't look like Spring-Heeled Jack, but they have the same characteristics. And, of course, the one thing that is most familiar to people would be the medieval idea of the devil. Because, again, sometimes Spring-Heeled Jack has horns. He has, as I said, the glowing eyes and fire coming from his mouth. Sometimes he's even represented as having a tail. So you can certainly see how in the minds of particularly the Victorian people, they would have seen an echo of something much more ancient. Again, because the devil, of course, is very often represented as a trickster.
Well, and you wonder if this thing has had to adapt to whatever time era it lived in. And when there was a time of belief in fairies and that type of legend and lore, did it look one way? And then as Victorian era began to kick up, did it have to take on a guise looking more human so that it could blend in or be a part of this area without maybe being noticed as quickly as it would have if it was just walking around in its full form?
Yes, I think so. I think for the Victorians, he took on a Victorian character, just as in the case of the Arthurian legend, since you mentioned that. You know, every age finds its own Arthur. And, of course, in the Victorian era, you had Alfred Lord Tennyson's Idylls of the King, which basically turned King Arthur into a Victorian gentleman. So in the same way, you have all these old folklore traditions that go back to the Middle Ages and beyond, gradually being reshaped and developed as you go through time.
Well, and doesn't this sound like kind of the fabled version of Merlin and some of his abilities and what he was able to do?
I suppose that you could say there are some parallels, although Merlin isn't. Well, no, I was going to say Merlin is never seen as a trickster, but that's not really true. There are stories of him laughing uncontrollably and then people saying, "Why? What are you laughing at?" And then he would go off onto some deep and mysterious piece of prophecy because he alone had seen the trick. And of course, one of the other things that is paralleled here with Spring-Heeled Jack is the laugh, because he is also said to laugh insanely at the people that he was attacking. So he's not silent. You never hear him saying anything. As far as I know, there is no report of him ever saying a word to anyone. But he does laugh, he does leap, and he does breathe fire.
Does he ever take anything that people are aware of?
No. Again, he doesn't seem to be a thief. There is a story, one of the reports in the newspapers, report him leaping up from the ground to a second-story window as though he was about to break in. And an elderly lady sitting inside saw him and apparently died almost immediately of heart attack. So although I said that Spring-Heeled Jack never attacked anyone, you could say, if that story is true, that he was the cause of a death.
It almost sounds like Tim Burton took the idea of Jack Skellington from his Nightmare Before Halloween idea, almost from this character as well, with the strange abilities and kind of the long, lanky, creepy vibe that he was putting out there.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you know, Burton does seem to know a lot about folklore of different periods, and certainly it's weird enough. But it's funny that you mentioned the Slender Man earlier, because, of course, that is I see that as a modern representation, along with the Mothman stories, which is another kind of echo of this more old tale.
Well, let's talk about the fact that, okay, you start seeing accounts of this being reported in newspapers back then. And having been spread around, did the church ever weigh in on what they believed this being or creature was, or was it because of the Puritan version back then? It was obviously the physical representation of Satan.
No, I've not seen any record at all of the church becoming involved. It always seems to have been the Lord Mayor, the civic people, if you like, who got involved in this. I mean, there's even a story about the Duke of Wellington, who was well into his 80s then, coming out of retirement to lead a group of people in search for, you know, a manhunt, indeed, for Spring-Heeled Jack. They never found him. The other interesting thing here is that there are stories of people being arrested. We have accounts from the courts of the time in which various people were picked up and accused of being Spring-Heeled Jack, and they were interrogated, but no evidence was ever found strong enough to convict them.
When there would be these posses, for lack of a better term, out seeking this being, when they would be out searching one area, would he be seen at night in another area, or did he seem to go underground from time to time?
Well, he went underground, certainly, and he would disappear sometimes for as long as a year and then reappear again. But yes, there are stories of people in one part of London, let's say Kensington, where he made a few appearances, searching for him and then discovering that he'd been sighted, you know, 10 miles away in another part of London. So he did always seem to be one step ahead of everybody.
You know, one of the other characters, and I don't know if you're familiar with this character at all, but this almost sounds, Tim, like the horror movie character that we've had here of Jeepers Creepers.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
They've done two movies. The third one is coming out, I guess, next year. Are you familiar with that creeper, they call him, from the movies at all?
I've missed that one somehow. I don't know about that at all, but it sounds interesting.
Yeah, you should, if you get a chance, check it out. I'm sure you could probably find a link on YouTube or Netflix or one of these to check it out. But, you know, he's this kind of mythological, shape-shifting kind of creature with bat wings and long, lanky, strong, you know, I mean, he's much more vengeful and feeds off of humans and the parts that he needs from them, especially fear, which, you know, it sounds like Spring-Heeled Jack kind of eats off of the energy and fear that he, you know, creates with these people. But that he's able to leap, fly, jump, do these astounding things and has kind of the glowing eyes all seems to kind of fit into that as well. And I wonder how many other characters have been kind of spurred on because of this original incarnation of Springheel Jack. Are there any other, you know, you talked about Mothman and Slenderman, but looking in that same time era throughout Europe, was there any other characters that were similar to this that were appearing in other locations?
Well, there's one very significant one who's called the Spring Man, and you can see immediately why that name would strike the
right.
same feeling.
Sure.
He turned up in Prague during the Second World War, and he seems to have been something of a kind of hero of the resistance movement, because he would leap out at the Germans and attack them. And you know, nothing more is known of him. He was seen quite often within the city between 1940 and 1945. But after that, he just disappeared and no more was known about him. So there are one or two characters like that. There's the famous, one of the most famous experiences here happened in 1877, which was a little bit after the main sightings had begun to die away. But this happened at Aldershot Barracks in England. This was the centre of the British Army at the time. And two soldiers who were on duty in the guard room that night claimed that they saw this strange figure clad in a white suit, white tight-fitting suit, who leapt over their heads, knocked them down, sprang over the gates and disappeared into the darkness. Now, this triggered all kinds of strange ideas that, you know, this was an otherworldly being in some ways. And I think that leads very neatly into some of the more modern ideas that Springheel Jack may have been an alien.
Or it could just prove that Freddie Mercury is a time traveler.
It could well be.
A white, tight-fitting jumpsuit? I'm just saying, it's something to consider.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But he also seems to have a round helmet on his head. So we've got this idea that traditional idea of the alien as having the goldfish bowl on his head, you know, it's
sure.
a bit like that as well. But I think it was John Keel, who, as you know, is one of the great modern writers and historians of UFOs and ufology, wrote an article on this in which he said, well, obviously, Springheel Jack was an alien because he came from a place, a bit like Superman, where the gravity was heavier and therefore he was able to leap over things much more easily because our gravity was less. And this was quite persuasive. A lot of people, I think, believed this.
Well, isn't that intriguing? And then you've got Edgar Rice Burroughs, who wrote the Martian Tales of John Carter, who John wakes up finding his body on Mars, and he has the ability to leap and do remarkable things with strength and all of that. Boy, there are a lot of threads that seem to attach out to historical and fictional characters that that may have been influenced by this creature himself. We're up against a break again. I want to kind of continue to explore with this. Did Springheel Jack ever leave behind any physical evidence? Footprints, handprints, claw marks? Did he leave anything behind, clothing that might have been found? And if not, why does this legend continue to be perpetrated? What is so fascinating about this to keep it alive when there's no evidential proof behind for him? We'll talk about that and so much more. John Matthews is our guest when we return to Darkness Radio. We're back, dealing with Springheel Jack. Our guest, John Matthews. We'll have a link up to his information and his new book, The Mystery of Springheel Jack, From Victorian Legend to Steampunk Hero. Did this creature ever leave behind any physical markings? Scratches, claw marks, hoof prints, footprints, pieces of his clothing, anything that was left behind after one of his attacks?
Oh, very definitely so. There are a couple of very distinct things. The scratches, most definitely. I mean, several young ladies were found to have been scratched with something very sharp that looked like five talons had scratched them across the shoulders or the back or the breast or whatever. And their clothes had been ripped in many cases. So this was obviously quite a feverish attack, even though, as I said, it never seems to have gone any further than just that.
And here we have another reference to an iconic horror character, Freddy Krueger, right, with the the yep. long hand claws and slashing of the clothes and terrifying the women at night. That's an interesting aspect.